Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. My name is Ben, and I'm your host. And this week, I've got Reverend Robin King sitting down with me again over another cup of coffee to dive into another conversation around a topic of faith. Now, last week, we were talking about the story of Noah's Ark and how that was sort of a new beginning and hitting the restart button. And really, when we think about it, Jesus and his time here on earth with his disciples and everything that he taught us was a little bit similar to that, in the sense that it created a new beginning or a new clean slate. And so today we're going to explore the parallel between those two stories. So welcome, Robin. Welcome back.
Hey, Ben.
It's good to sit down again for another podcast after being gone for a little while. I was in Ireland, and while Kelly and I were over there, we visited some really, really cool places, including some old monasteries and churches and cathedrals that got me thinking a lot about this topic. So it's really interesting that you wanted to talk about this today. Seeing churches that are 800 years old, 1,000 years old, and the incredible detail and work that went into crafting statues and artwork and these massive stone structures that would have cost a fortune got me thinking a lot about, is this what Jesus would have wanted? What would Jesus think about this if he came, you know, 800 years later or 1,000 years later, 1,200 years later after his death, and saw what the church was turning into? So I don't know where you want to start today, but...
Well, let's start right there. I know we wanted to do a little bit, sort of continue on with the Ark thing and everything, but let's just start right there
we'll
for a second,
because
I was liking what you were saying there up until the point where you said, since he's begun so long. the thing is, Jesus is here and does see those things. I honestly do believe that. I don't think this is the story of Jesus as a story of, you know, his time on earth and he's gone.
No, I think I agree.
And the reason I think that's irrelevant to the...
If he physically walked in, would he do a big face palm?
How do you know he didn't?
What do you mean?
Well, how do you know? While you were standing there looking at one of those great cathedrals, that Jesus didn't walk in.
That's a good point.
He could have.
Yeah, he could have.
Although, personally, I think it was highly unlikely, because I think the last place you'd probably find Jesus these days is a church. I don't mean that sarcastically. I mean it in terms of, we have some stories of Jesus being in the synagogue, right? He went to the synagogue in his hometown, or mm-hmm. he's been to the synagogue too. And so I think Jesus was probably a good Jew and did go to synagogue. I won't mention the fact that you weren't in church last Sunday, Ben. The thing about that, because you were away, I know. But the thing about that is that I don't think that the most important stories are the stories of Jesus in the synagogue. I think the stories of Jesus out with people and helping poor people and hungry people and sick people and hurting people are the stories that are most important. And I think that's where we probably find Jesus today. That being said, though, the thing is that we created this thing, this church thing. We created this church thing.
We did.
It's not, sorry, God didn't make it. Religion's the thing that we use to, hopefully, optimistically, help us understand our faith better. Not quite so optimistically, it's also the thing that we use to control people and make people think what we want them to think. And that's the thing, right, is that we often fall into that trap of, so-and-so says it, so it must be right, and then mm-hmm. we believe that. Jesus didn't ever really, I don't think, ever really asked for us to do that. Jesus said, go and make disciples of nations, but I think what he meant was to go and encourage people to live like you guys, who are trying to live like me, the way I showed you, which is, you know, the way that is life-giving and loving and caring, the way that God wants us to live.
So what does it mean to be a disciple?
Literally, I mean, technically, I think it means to be like a follower, and mm-hmm. someone who aspires to be as the someone person they're following being is
mentored or
yeah. And we tend to always look at it in that sort of religious way, and it very quickly then turns into something less positive, right? It turns into somebody, you know, following a particular person, and wanting to be like that particular person, just like we want to be like Jesus.
Mm.
But Jesus' point would be, I don't want you to be me. I want you to be what I am, which is love, which is grace and respect and caring for people and turning that into action. I mean, and that's the thing about the I am the way, the truth, and the life, right? No one comes to the Father but through me. I know I've said this before, but I don't think what Jesus meant there was me, Jesus. I think what he meant was me, the way. If you follow the way, which is true and life-giving, and that takes you to God.
Yeah.
And that way, for lots of people, the label of that way is Jesus. For lots of people, the label on that way isn't Jesus. It's either someone or something else. There are many labels.
But if it's still a path of love,
I bet Jesus would want us to drop the labels.
Yeah.
And recognize that we are all following in our own path. If we are following the way that is true and life-giving, we are following the way.
So speaking of labels, you've mentioned several times before in sermons and in episodes of this podcast that in the early days after the crucifixion, the Jesus followers as a community called themselves people of the way, not Christians. When did that shift? When did the church become the church?
Well,
when did Christianity become a religion?
That's kind of two different things. In the sense that, to be perfectly correct about it, and this won't be perfectly correct because I can't remember exactly who it was, the term Christian, Christians didn't call themselves Christians. Somebody else called them Christians first, and it stuck.
Okay. Right?
Followers of Christ, Christians, right?
Right.
The church, we call Pentecost the birthday of the church because it's the day at which the disciples were inspired by the Spirit to go and share the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it that way, because then the establishing of churches is more readily ascribed to Paul traveling around and
right.
establishing communities. And those communities, and initially people met in houses, right? They didn't have churches. The first actual churches were, in fact, Roman basilicas, right? Like Roman, basically community halls that had a nice, lovely little apse thing at the end. So you could turn it into a hall that was appropriate for. But even the like the first real churches, the table was in the middle and we all stood around it.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, heck, there wasn't pews in churches until Middle Ages, after the Middle Ages even.
Hmm.
That's why many of those great cathedrals that you see have chairs. It's not because they took the pews out, it's because they never had them.
Oh, wow.
They weren't fixed to the floor like North American churches are. Which is why... don't get me started on pews, because I did a whole thing about I actually wrote a paper about it once, and
yeah.
So I researched it, and it's fascinating stuff as to why it was to get, actually this is relevant to our conversation, the point of having pews was to get people to sit where you wanted them to,
yeah.
So they weren't in your way when you were processing around,
right?
And then of course you had people sitting where you wanted them to according to their status. So you end up with, Scotland in particular has many rural small churches, old churches in England. There are literally booths where people would sit where they had a view of the front, but you couldn't see them. You rabble sitting in the regular pews, right? The idea was to not only get you to sit in a fixed spot so you couldn't move around, but that eventually you would sit where you could sit according to your status. People paid for pews, right? Even in North America, if you go into some of the really older churches on the East Coast, and even somewhere I grew up in the Anglican Cathedral in Toronto, the pews there still have nameplates.
Right.
They obviously don't mean anything other than their historical value now, right?
Right.
You can sit wherever you want. But initially, a family could own a pew and they paid for that privilege, and their plate would be on the right. pew, and that's where the family. And so, wow. if you go to the cathedral in Toronto, some of those pews are a really fascinating history of the families of the early days of York, right? Like the Rideites and the Jarvises and all those people. They had their own pews, and it's fascinating. We don't do that anymore. In fact, now more and more we're getting back into, let's have chairs because we can move them around.
Yeah, lots of churches are getting rid of right? their pews.
But again, it was based on your status. It was about hierarchy. It was about establishing your place, mm-hmm. right? And we still do that in churches, right? Because often, as much as we would like it not to, your place in the church is either established by how long you've been there in your regular attendance or how much money you give.
Mm.
Right?
Even just the terminology, a member in good standing.
Yeah.
Which we don't, in our church, we don't really pay attention to that anymore in terms of who's a member technically or who's technically not a member. We don't care yeah. about that. It's about the community.
Right.
The community is...
Right.
is who's there.
So here's
on the books.
Here's how that and it sounds like we've kind of rambled off in an odd direction. But really we're still talking about structure mm-hmm. and hierarchy. And how that's still prevalent in the church. In many churches there are many who are trying very hard for it not to be. It's still we still make jokes about, you know, what's going to happen when, you know, Mrs. Brown comes in on Sunday morning having attended for 57 years and some new person is sitting in her seat.
Yeah.
Ha, 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 ha. It's a joke, right? Because that never happens. Oh, it does. It does. There's a wonderful story from, this is a couple of years old now, but I remember reading this story about a church in the U.S. where an elderly lady died and left money to the church for a bronze version of her to sit in her pew.
No.
But this is the really weird part, is she's in the bronze, basically they bronzed her and stuck her in a pew.
Are you serious?
It's the actual person. Like so she's, I suppose, technically buried in the church.
Like her physical body?
Is in the bronze
thing. Is inside thing. The bronze?
Yeah.
Is that even allowed?
I have no idea how it is. And I want to say, although I hate this expression, I want to say it's fake news. But I actually don't think it is. I forget who reported it, but it was like the Post or
it's kind of creepy.
Somebody reported it. But it, not only is it super creepy, there are people who are not happy about it, either, which is, it's just a good thing. But the fact it was even allowed or even talked about or even, you know, anything like that, like I get an art installation where you have someone sitting in a pew, maybe in the middle of your church. That's actually kind of a cool idea, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not. This is not. This is basically the ultimate in, this is my place, damn it.
No one else
is going to get it.
Yeah.
And the thing, so how does this all relate to Noah's Ark and Jesus? Well, here's how I think it relates. Part of what's... I'm wanting to do with the Noah's Ark story over the next few weeks isn't actually about the whole business of how we've traditionally told the story as God didn't like what was happening, so he thought he'd wipe out everything except Noah and two of every animal, right? The world was sinning and damaged, and that's it for the world.
Too far gone.
Restart, right? Yeah. But I'm actually also kind of interested in what happened within the story that we don't talk about. Like, how did the animals get along on the ark? I mean, I think that's, especially with kids, that's a really... good thing to explore. But here's another thought about that. In the description of the instructions that Noah gets to build the ark, it says that to build the ark of this many cubits and that many cubits and of this kind of wood, and it would have a lower deck and two more decks below that. So which animals get to be in the bottom of the boat? Does the lion, because they're king of the jungle, do they get to be on the top? Mm. It's like a big cruise ship, right? You pay more for the first class, and then you do for what do they call that when you're in the bottom? It's not storage. It's I forget what they call it, but there's a term for it where you're basically, you don't have a porthole even.
Right.
You're in the bottom of the boat, and it's the cheapest, right?
Yeah.
And you pay at different amounts. So obviously, the rich people are riding on top and the poor people ride in the bottom.
Well, when we were coming back from Ireland, I was eyeing up the first class, like, little pods that they've got at the front. And I was pretty jealous because we'd already flown over there in economy, and I absolutely could not sleep. And I thought to myself, just the fact that I'm able to fly across the ocean, a trip that not very long ago was a very dangerous proposition and incredibly expensive that almost nobody would be able to do. And it's even today something that's pretty, pretty privileged to have that opportunity at all. And then thinking about that airplane having these different classes, like we still have that today.
Right. And so many examples of it. And the thing about that is that, and I mean, there's so many different ways you can explain this, I know, but here's how I see that. First of all, first class is at the front, but everybody boards from the front. So even the people who have the cheapest seats have to walk through the most expensive seats to get to the cheap seats. The people with the most expensive seats do not need to even look at the people sitting in the cheap seats because they're at the front.
They get
probably get on and off first as well anyway, right? Or I think maybe they board last, so they still don't have to look at you. But the same thing with the cruise ship, right? I mean, it's very hierarchical, and you can stay, if you're in first class, you can stay in the first class section and never have to encounter any of those, you know, scummy poor people who are in the bottom. But we do so many things like that. And I've heard, actually, I just heard this, this is perhaps a figment of the Trump era, but somebody recently was talking about how important it is to have rich people so that poor people have something to aspire to.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just think, are you freaking kidding me? First of all. Secondly, talk about some of this stuff ahead of time, right? And I mentioned the idea of the way the Ark was constructed as like kind of like a cruise ship. And your immediate response was, well, you think the elephant should probably be in the bottom because you want to put the heaviest stuff in the bottom of the boat. It's about, you know, ballast
just practically
and stuff.
Speaking.
And so practically speaking, and you probably want birds at the top, right? I mean, that's what I think. I think you put birds at the top. But the thing is, instead of going to who's most important, we went straight to what's the practical thing here in terms of, it's not about the value, it's about how is this going to work out for everybody, right? And see, I think that's Jesus at work right there, is that Jesus was never about whether somebody was rich or poor. Jesus was about we all have value and we all have a place. We all have... And we're all equal in that value as human beings, right? And so, for instance, last week we had the story of the lectionary story was about the rich man who comes to Jesus and says, "What must I do to enter the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus says, "Give away everything you own." And the guy can't do it because, you know, rich people are going to burn in the fiery pit. That isn't what Jesus means, of course. We've often looked at it that way, or maybe not looked at it that way out loud, but in the back of our minds thought, yeah, those rich people are going to get their comeuppance. But that isn't, I think what Jesus means is what is the problem for that man is that his wealth has become the wall between him and intentionally living love with others. Mm-hmm. It hasn't helped him engage others. It hasn't helped him serve others. Instead, it's just built a wall between him and everything else.
Yeah.
And that's what some of these things do, right? I don't think having to walk through first class to get to your cheap crappy seat at the back where you're not going to be able to sleep is in any way encouraging you to want to be rich. It's encouraging you to be envious of people who have money. I honestly do. And I think that's, first of all, that's not fair. And secondly, it's wrong. It's just wrong, as far as Jesus is concerned. And I think Jesus is, first of all, Jesus is about equity. Not even fairness, but equity. We're all of equal value. And justice in that is about sharing what we have and who we are and how we do that in order that everyone else, as well as us, might have fulfillment, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Ark story, one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit is who gets to be where, right? Who's important enough to be where? Because the issue isn't about importance. It's about where you belong, mm-hmm. right? And the way I think that kind of ties into Jesus a little bit, coincidentally, this Sunday, the lectionary story, gospel story, is about one of those versions of the story where two of the disciples come to Jesus and they want to sit on the right and the left hand of Jesus in heaven. Mm-hmm. And first of all, Jesus says, that's not my, of course, obviously, says, I don't get to decide that. Right. God decides that. And secondly, the next thing that happens, very next thing that happens in the story is that all the other disciples hear about this and they're pretty pissed, right? Because they're thinking, hey, how come these two guys are more special than the rest of, they must think they're more special.
Yeah.
Right. It's kind of like they saw them sitting in first class suddenly. And without necessarily even any realization of how they got there. But it doesn't instantly jump to, yeah, those two guys are pretty deserving. It jumps to, what the hell? And envy, right? But then Jesus says basically, no, we don't, you guys, hey, guys, we don't have hierarchy here. We mm-hmm. are all equal. In fact, by the way, as I have been trying to tell you over and over and over again, I have come to serve, not to be served. And those who follow me want to serve. And whenever I read anything about Jesus saying something about he came to serve, not to be served, it just reminds me how often we've gotten off track worshiping Jesus rather than what Jesus, trying to follow what Jesus was about. Yeah. How we've gotten off track worshiping God to the extent where things have actually gotten in the way, kind of like the rich man and his money, right?
Yeah.
We've, instead of connecting us to God, we've put things in the way. And that's not to say, by the way, that's not to say that some of those great cathedrals and some of the great art of the church or any of the really great church experiences we've had haven't been done with the intention of connecting us with God. Mm-hmm. It's just that times change and things are different at different times in our lives and in history. And sometimes we need to be really aware that what connected people to God 1,000 years ago may not be working for us today and the other way around.
Yeah,
right?
I would agree. I think it's a real mixture, and it's which makes it confusing, where some of the intentions were really pure and really coming from a place of love and wanting to share the message
right.
and the inspiration that people had of
perfect example.
Jesus' life.
Perfect example is cathedrals. Those great cathedrals are built so tall,
yeah.
and the taller the better, because they aspire to reach heavenward to God, right?
Right.
The spire itself was designed to point heavenward.
Right.
Well, now we understand that God is everywhere. And here's a really interesting thing. So it's different, right? So here's really interesting thing. Mark Gelman writes awesome children's stories. And he wrote a book called Does God Have a Big Toe? In which one of the stories he writes about is how the animals heard that something was going to happen, that God was going to do this thing. They'd heard about the Noah story, right? They'd
okay.
heard God was going to wash away everything and it's going to rain for it. And so they thought they should go and find God and talk to God about it. And the various animals decide that God is in different places. Like one decides that God's in the mountaintop. So he goes to the mountain and talks to the mountain. And of course, God doesn't answer because God's not there. And finally, it gets to the fish. And the fish all go, guys, God's like the water. We swim in the water. Wherever we go, the water is everywhere. God is everywhere. And so because of this, God didn't just save two of every fish. God saved all the fish in the water, right? and it's a wonderful story, but it's a wonderful story that makes an amazingly true point, which is that God is everywhere.
Right.
Not just in heaven above or, you know, with the earth below and stuff, but God is everywhere. And if God is everywhere, then we engage God everywhere. We don't just point heavenward. We don't just create works of art that say God is, you know, here, or and we don't just say God is in that person or that person. God is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's sort of the great equity, you know. God is everywhere.
As usual, there's so many different directions that we could take this in exploring the Noah and the Ark story further, and how Noah's descendants started fresh and started to create a new new communities and new structures and new ways of living. And then how also in the parallel there that we're exploring, how Jesus' disciples did that as well. And there's loads of examples of ways that religion and the church have done harm or have created structure that doesn't align with what it's supposed to be about. But there's also so much good. And, and in being critical of it, we also don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. So maybe...
Interesting metaphor. But yes, that's absolutely true. But that it's life, right?
Yeah.
Again, that's maybe an aspect of the Noah story to talk about is as well, is that even in that moment where the great creator looks at the creation and goes, kind of like a painting, and goes, yeah, I don't like that, I'm going to redo it, still leave something from the first creation to rebuild the second one with, right? There's all sorts of directions we can go with that. Maybe we will.
Maybe not you today. Will on Sunday.
Maybe.
It's always interesting to me sitting in church on Sunday when I'm there, which I usually am if I'm not away. It's always interesting to me listening for pieces of our conversation from the podcast earlier in the week and how they morph and influence your message during that sermon time. Yeah. So looking forward to that. And thank you so much for this time, Robin. I always enjoy it.
Thanks, Ben.
We hope that everyone listening has enjoyed it. And hey, if you're listening to this on iTunes, now that we finally have the podcast episodes up on the Apple iTunes library, give us a rating, a review. Please share this show with friends, which you can do just right through the podcast app on your iPhone or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also check out previous episodes of Six Ways from Sunday on our website, which is risingspiritministry.com. And you'll also find there past sermon videos, also links to the live streamed service each Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. in Alberta. And Robin's blog is also on the website. So lots of ways that you can connect with the Six Ways from Sunday community. And we would also love to hear from you what you've thought of these episodes, what it's, thoughts that it's brought up for you, and even just ideas for future conversations. So thanks again for listening. And as always, spread joy and be love. Take care.